Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 57 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 59 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Tuesday. We've got high pressure firmly in control over the area, providing us with plenty of sinking air that compresses and heats up quickly. So we'll be seeing those high temperatures soaring as we go throughout the rest of today into the afternoon hours. High temperatures likely climb into the low to mid 80s for us in Park City. Yeah, low to mid 80s. We'll be looking at those high temperatures climbing into the lower 90s in the Heber Valley. It is going to be a hot one out there, folks. That UV index is at 9. That's in the very high category. So make sure you have that sunscreen SPF 30 or greater. You could burn in less than 15 minutes if we're not careful. So again, lather it on and lather it on again. Now, as we go into your Wednesday, we'll start to track some changes. A cold front will begin to make its way into the area. Ahead of that cold front, look for some strong, gusty, southwesterly winds to pick up. They'll pick up anywhere from 15 to 25 miles per hour, sustaining with some gust up to 40 miles per hour at times. That's also going to lead to an elevated fire danger concern with those very gusty winds and very low humidity levels. So please, no outside burning as we go throughout your Wednesday. Temperatures will still be on the toasty side as we climb near 80 in Park City. We'll see those highs in the mid 80s in the Heber Valley. Now, as we make our way into Thursday, behind that system, we will see some changes. Now, Wednesday afternoon into Wednesday night, there's a slight chance of a pop-up shower or storm developing that could have some gusty winds, some heavy downpours, and maybe even a little lightning as well. So be aware of that. But once we get into Thursday behind that system, sunshine returns and cooler air returns. Highs will only be in the mid-60s for us in Park City. We'll see those highs in the low 70s in the Heber Valley. Friday will feature lots of sunshine with temperatures in the mid-70s for us in Park City. We'll see those highs near 80 in the Heber Valley. And then heading into the weekend, another weak system moves by, knocking our temperatures back down into the 60s again as we go into the weekend in Park City with highs in the 60s and low 70s in the Heber Valley. That's what your latest forecast with the Wasatch Back on ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. We'll take a look at the agenda for Wednesday's county council meeting. Later on, the superintendent of the South Summit School District, Greg Mon, with details on last night's board meeting, as well as the upcoming graduation. And from the People's Health Clinic, CEO Mari Lining and their new pediatrician Zainab Kayak. Well, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow at the Richens Building starting just after 2 o'clock. On the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, first up, interviews for the four applicants for one vacancy on the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. This after Commissioner Tim Jeffrey resigned. So this new person will fill the unexpired term, or will it be for a full term?
I believe it'll be for the unexpired term. I would want to mention to listeners, we also have some openings on the Eastern Side Planning Commission as well. I think we're looking for at least two individuals over there. So we're trying to get the word out as best we can. We've had a little bit more interest in the Basin Side over the past year or two. So we're hoping to get the word out on the East Side as well.
All right. At 3:15, continued discussion regarding the proposed rezone and master plan development for Junction Commons. Council previously raised concern about the cumulative impact of all of the entitled developments in the area, adding several hundred, almost 460 just with this development, and just the concern that it's only going to exasperate traffic in an already congested area. So just because the new traffic study says that the entitled growth is less than the 2050 forecast, does that finding allow this development now to go through?
I think that is a debatable point. You really summarized that well in that I think the council tries to always take the approach that each individual project application is assessed on its own merits, but at the same time, we do have an area here in the Kimball Junction that is going to, that one one Dakota Pacific is going to impact the UOP, which may impact Junction Commons. And so we are trying to take a little bit more of a cumulative effect on that. We've asked the applicant to take in maybe more of the area in their assessments as opposed to just what's happening on site in Junction Commons. I think they will address that on Wednesday. They're also looking at some area median income levels. And I think the council is going to be very interested in what those AMI levels are in this project.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting to note that the Junction Commons development becomes more of a residential development than a commercial one that it's always been. So what does this mean for the county's tax base? Will any concern that we're losing out on this commercial tax collection?
I'm not sure if it's enough to be concerned from that perspective. I think affordable housing is also a priority of the council. So there are, you probably maybe lose one and get another. I think that's really something, I think that's why the council would maybe focus in on those AMI levels. I do believe there's some general consensus among the council that this area would benefit from a facelift, from doing something different, that they, maybe the model of what has been there isn't modern, isn't working today. Some housing in that area mixed in with the commercial might be a better fit. But again, you've mentioned a very good thing, is how much is too much in this area. And this is a good area, as I've mentioned on your program before, this is a good area for transit. It's a good area for walkability, for other stores. Obviously, there's commercial and retail in this area, shopping. So those are important aspects of housing. But how this landmark, other roads are very congested as it is, and so how much is too much?
Yeah. Well, and this isn't only a sales tax possible decline, but also a property tax one as well, as you shift from commercial to residential, right? I mean, because commercial businesses pay about twice as much as residential owners.
Yeah. So I think that's something to take in mind. But we also want something here that works. We want something here that is beneficial to not only the community, but maybe a tourist or a visitor. So we want things to be thriving. And we want, and I think these kinds of projects, once they're dated and once they maybe turn over a little bit, it's good to have this facelift. I think that could actually bring in more individuals or more retail or commercial that will benefit the county financially as well.
More people to buy stuff.
That's right.
Okay. This is for work session only. When does it come back for a final vote?
I think this is maybe the third time we've heard it. It might even be the fourth. And these are 90-minute sessions, so they've been very intense. I would not anticipate we would be dragging this out too much longer. I think it just really depends on how it goes. I think there's been a session or two where I don't think everyone was prepared to have the conversation that the council wanted to have. And I think that the developer in this case does know what we're looking for, and I expect them to have those details on AMI levels and traffic impacts, not only just to their project, but the area. And I think we'll keep meeting until we have those questions answered.
All right. Later on, a discussion and possible approval of the Restaurant Arts and Parks Tax Cultural Committee's grant recommendations. This tax allows the county to collect 0.1% to spend on arts and recreation within the county. And I should note that it is being recommended that KPCW receive $145,000 to host the Back Alley Bash, to help fund the community campfire program, and to provide underwriting to area nonprofits during the pledge drive. So can you give us kind of a breakdown of the applications there?
Yes, we had 36 applications submitted. We disqualified three of those. Just they didn't meet the standard of rap cultural. They chose to not fund a total of six other applications, and so there's 27 that are recommended for funding. Of course, as is always the case, we received more requests for funds than we have. I think we had almost $3 million in requests, and I think there was just over $1.5 million available for funding. So I think the board did a great job of doing what we can with what we have and making those recommendations to council. I don't know if there will be a lot of conversation around those that weren't funded. I think council is aware of some of those and has been looking at that. But I think, like I said, the board did a great job of really nailing those down and using their ranking system and their scoring system appropriately.
Yeah, so that's how it's done, through like some kind of rubrics?
That's correct. Yes, they have a score. I think it's a 0 to 6 metric, and then they score them appropriately with those numbers. Yeah. 6 is exemplary, I think.
All right, and you're not on the committee, but I thought it was interesting that Song Summit was denied a grant. And the reason I saw in the health or in the staff report was that Song Summit is first and foremost a health and wellness organization as opposed to a cultural music gathering. So that eliminated it, huh?
Yes, and that's a good, it's a great question. That's the kind of thing I think maybe council might dive into a little bit. I think that particular one was also mentioned that they give scholarships and you're not allowed to use this grant for other grants or other scholarships. So I think that was another concern that the committee had, but I think those are the kinds of things that I'll expect the council to drill into just a little bit on why that is. There was several other organizations that were considered too new to be able to fund, and that's also, it's not debatable that they're new, but I think it's an aspect I think the council will want to maybe ask a few more questions about.
And then the Sundance Institute's grant also turned down because they couldn't commit to any specific dates to showing movies in the park or around Summit County. I mean, is that kind of like the end of that program?
It's a good question. If you remember last year, the board recommended that we do fund Sundance, and the council chose not to. So this is now here, the board is recommending that we do not fund a Sundance, and this Behind the Lens, I believe it's the Behind the Lens program that they're trying to fund. And I think there's just some confusion about dates and when this would take place. And I have heard that if this isn't funded, that this program will go away. So I think the council might want to ask about what the benefit of this program is to the community, and if it is a benefit, maybe they change their minds on that too. But I believe they'll probably end up going essentially with what the board recommended.
All right, and then just to note that in addition to KPCW, some of the other big grant winners or possibly grant winners was over $100,000. The Park City Summit County Arts Council, the Alf Engen Museum, Mountain Town Music, Park City Film, Egyptian Theater, Park City Performing Arts Foundation, Swanner Preserve, Utah Symphony and Opera, and the Kimball Arts Center.
Yes.
At 6 o'clock, a joint meeting will be held with the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. There are 10 discussion items on the agenda falling under three topics. So what do you hope to get out of this 90-minute discussion?
Well, if you noticed last week, we met with the Eastside Planning Commission, and we had a 60-minute session and scheduled, and it wasn't enough. It wasn't near enough, and we actually went to 90 minutes, and we maybe need 2 hours. This is something we need to do more regularly. I think it's a great opportunity for the council and the Planning Commission to make this effort to get on the same page, as I'm sure your listeners and you know. It's usually inappropriate for council members to attend planning commission meetings. They usually end up being a body that hears a similar issue, and it's not appropriate for them to be at those other meetings. So this is a chance for us to take whatever planning application off the table and just talk about what do we want to see, what does the future of our community look like, what is maybe some direction that the council can give to the planning commission on as they go about their work. If you follow that last session last week, the Eastside Planning Commission had specific questions for the council, and we talked about the village overlay zones and some of the things that are affecting the Eastside character. And I think that kind of thing can also take place here on Wednesday with Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. I think they've got some great questions, and it'll be a great discussion.
So how often are these joint meetings with planning commissioners happening now?
Are you asking me how often we have them as opposed to how often we want to have them? It hasn't been enough. It really has. And that's probably mostly on me. I just need to keep that on my schedule because we do want to have this. The councils said they want to have this more often, and we just need to get us together more often. I know the Planning Commission is also, they're very busy. They have lots of other meetings, obviously Planning Commission meetings and other responsibilities, but they've all said this is a value and they want to have these meetings. So I think we need to do this at least twice a year, maybe even three times a year. Maybe quarterly is a little much, but we even want to shoot for that just to try and get us together at least twice a year.
Okay. So. I did see Deputy County Manager Jenna Young at yesterday's Wasatch Back Economic Summit. Were you able to make it?
I wasn't. Nope. I'm out of town yesterday and today.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I did talk to the chair, Candace Hart, about it. Saying he mentioned the speaker and said it was good. We were going to have to start talking about the economy maybe more in our. We've got the budget kicking off in June, whereas the cities are all winding up. And so, how does this current economic situation we're in, how's that going to affect our 2027 budget? I think there was a lot that came out of that that we'll have to talk about.
Mm-hmm. One of the outbreak sessions I attended was on regional collaboration. And again, it was very similar to, this discussion with the Joint Planning Commission meetings. And I guess whose job is that to make happen? I mean, where's the leadership making sure that the right hand is talking to the left here along the Wasatch Back, especially since any Olympic funding request apparently will now be required to come from the Wasatch Back, not from Summit County or Wasatch County, but as one entity?
Well, I think my answer would be it depends, but I do believe that the buck stops with the county manager in this case. I think that if we're talking about Olympic funding, if we're talking about wildfire mitigation, I think it's incumbent upon me to get the right people in the right rooms. I think we're constantly trying to do that. We work transportation wise with either counties and cities and along the Wasatch Back and MAG and High Valley Transit and. So there's a constant level of coordination that's going on. We don't always do it perfectly, but I think that's something we're always striving to do. And like I said, it's my job to make sure the proper staff is in those rooms when we're making those decisions. As a county, we have sometimes had to fight to be in Olympic rooms, not fight in an aggressive way, but we've had to make sure that we're part of that conversation because we've had at least the impression that we've been left out in those. Summit County is not, we're not just Park City, we are Summit County, and we need to be in those rooms as well. So I think that's all of us making that collective effort, but of course I think that falls on me primarily.
Mm-hmm. As well as Dustin Graybaugh, I'm going to add, we all know how difficult it is to manage everyone's calendar, so sometimes you just got to say, okay, we're doing it. And if you can be there, you can be there. If not, you miss out.
That's true. Yes, I do that all the time. I do that with a very busy council who all have responsibilities for other people. I say, I really would like you to be in this meeting here. We're going to have it at this time. If you can make it, please do. Sometimes we obviously we expect and require certain people to be in certain places. But you're right, we do. We make a lot of meetings. And we say, we got to go. Let's do it. It's times of the essence.
Yeah. And one very big difference that was kind of alluded to yesterday was the way growth is kind of coming on board. I mean, it was mentioned that Park City, and this was by Natalie Gochnow, that Park City and to a lesser extent Summit County is, quote, managing growth. And yet you can't turn your head in Wasatch County without seeing some sort of construction going on. So to have some kind of unified vision, I mean, it sounds like we have very different visions of growth and development. So will we ever come together?
Yeah. I think, talking to individuals in Morgan County and in Wasatch County, they've been very complimentary of our efforts to set aside land as open space. Mm-hmm. They're coming along and they're trying to do that as well, but they've been very complimentary of us doing that. I think Ms. Gardner had mentioned that as well in her talk. So we're happy about that. And that does curb growth and makes for a better community. But we also are losing population. We have lost population. population over the last few years in Summit County. Wasatch is continuing to be maybe the fastest growing county in the state of Utah. So we're right on each other's border, and we have those kinds of pressures, but we are also growing from a commercial base, from a job growth. We're having jobs. So we're requiring more people to work in our community, yet we're not able to house them. And so that's putting those border counties pressure on them as well to house them. We're trying to house as well. We're trying to make our housing affordable. I think that's the council's emphasis on that affordable housing is to do just that. I think Summit County is different, and I think there's, in this way, I think that's great. We have set aside lands for open spaces. That's been a priority of us, and I think that's been a priority of the community as well, and I'm very proud of how we've done with that so far.
Okay. Shane, anything else you want to mention?
If I could just mention something I think you're very familiar with is at our last meeting, we had that ordinance we passed about the primary residential exemption. I just want to keep that on people's radars that you only have until September 15th by state statute to apply for that primary exemption. We used to have that until the end of November, so just keep that in mind that September 15th is now that state mandated deadline, and make sure people are the onus is on the resident to apply for that exemption. So,
all right, appreciate.
And I think that's all.
Okay, thanks so much, Scott. Shane.
Leslie, thank you. Have a good day today. Thanks.
That's Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Well, after a warm winter, Park City fire officials are gearing up for wildfire season. KPCW's Christine Weller reports open fires and fireworks have already been banned.
The Park City Fire District and its Summit and Wasatch County partners are preparing for a long wildfire season. Though Utah saw a typical amount of moisture this winter, the Beehive State had record low snowpack and abnormally high temperatures. That means spring runoff, which is crucial to Utah's water supply, began early. During a Park City Council meeting May 7th, Park City Fire Marshal Mike Owens said more warm temperatures are on the horizon. According to the National Weather Service, an El Nino pattern is developing, which likely means a hot summer for Utah. Owens said the moisture from early spring runoff will turn into quick plant growth. High temperatures will dry them out just as fast.
Our fuels are going to dry out a little faster, and our fire season is going to start a little bit sooner. The warm temperatures bring warm winds, and that's where we get into these fire problems.
But Owens said thanks to precautions, Park City hasn't faced too many issues with wildfires. In the last 12 years, he said there have only been 32 wildfires within city limits, with less than 10 acres burned. To prevent the spread of wildfires, the city council passes a seasonal fire ban every year, which it did again April 30th. Under the restrictions, open flames and fireworks are prohibited. Park City Chief Fire Code official Dave Thacker said the city has collaborated with the Utah Department of Transportation on wildfire mitigation along Interstate 80, including grading and weeding. That's to prevent another wildfire like in 2021, when the Parley's Canyon fire resulted in a four-day evacuation of 5,000 households.
The minute somebody's car catches on fire, the first thing they do is shoot into the shoulder. That catches on fire, and then it's racing towards our area. So that's been a huge project.
For locals who want to learn more about protecting their homes, Thacker said the building department offers property evaluations to assess for wildfire risks. The Park City Fire District also offers a wood chipping service to get rid of wildfire fuels. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, the South Summit Board of Education met last night, and on the phone with a recap of the meeting, I have Superintendent Greg Mon. Good morning, Greg. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you. So I heard the number of retirements at last night's board meeting was, quote, exceptional. How many retired?
Well, we ended up having, I think 11, I think is how many we've had announced retirement for at the end of this year. So it quite a few this year. And I have to say kudos for people. I mean, when you look at the number of years of service that some of these people have had. I mean, some of them go well into the 30 plus years, and it's just, you hate to lose that kind of experience, but at the same time, just so pleased and happy for them and proud of the contribution that they make to our community. You know, they do amazing work.
Yeah. So any idea why the mass exodus?
Well, I think people hit a certain age or they hit a certain number of years in a system, and that tends to happen. We also had some good salary increases over the last few years, and so we kind of expected that we might have more this year because it's been 3 years since then, and the way that retirement works in Utah for public employees, there's potentially some incentive to stay on an extra year or two to get 3 years with that. So, some of the people I've talked to, really, they're hitting that age of retirement and they have the years and they're wanting to enjoy, they're wanting to enjoy life while they are feeling young and spry still.
Yeah. So how many of them will need to be replaced? As we know, growth is declining in the district.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as far as those positions go, we'll be replacing or have replaced 10 of the 11.
Okay. And so that wasn't a problem, finding folks to step up and...
No. We've had some really good hiring years the last few years. Lots of applicants and just some great people to choose from. And we've had some wonderful hires, which is always a great thing to be able to bring to our community, to our district. Being able to recruit new blood and, you know, experienced blood, and it's been good. So far. I certainly don't want to jinx anything, but it's been great.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that this has got to save the district some money. New teachers, of course, aren't paid nearly as much as those with 30 years.
That is true. Yeah, that's true. That although, you know, each year, each person gets one more year of service. So it seems like it does. It definitely saves you. But it also kind of depends on what you get, because you do want to hire the very best, and sometimes those are new teachers, and sometimes you may be hiring an experienced teacher that has 20 years of experience in another district. And so, it's not quite as clear cut and dry like you're replacing everybody with new teachers. From a financial standpoint, it's pretty easy to think about it that way, but we really, our focus is on recruiting the best that we can, and some of those, like I said, are new to the profession and some are experienced in the profession. And so that's kind of how we look at it.
All right. I heard at yesterday's economic summit that all of Utah's school districts, with the exception of Beaver and Tooele school districts, are losing students. And of course, we know that part of that is Utah families having fewer children. So again, what does that look like at South Summit?
Well, you know, the state gives some projections, and we're projected to lose enrollment. I think that's the general case, like you mentioned, across the state, and it's not unique to Utah either. It's you do have declining birth rates and that, and so it is an issue that we'll see over the next. They anticipate probably the next 10 years that school districts in Utah will likely face decline enrollment before that starts to curve back up. Really what you hope is that it's done, you know, that if you're going to go through declining enrollment, you hope that it's just slow and steady rather than huge jumps. Large jumps, whether that's an increase or a big cliff of decrease, that's harder to adapt and shift and change for that on the fly, but we do it. But hopefully we'll see if we're having that declining enrollment, which is what's anticipated, and that's what we're seeing. We're hoping that it happens slowly and just kind of more steadily, so that it's easier to predict and adjust.
Yeah, I had heard at yesterday's economic summit that it wasn't too long, many years ago, I guess, when South Summit School District was trying to get bonds passed to deal with the growth that was coming, but it sounds like that's really no longer needed, or do you have other capital projects that will need some bonding?
Well, our
some of our facilities are certainly reaching the age where you have to consider the cost of repairs and renovations compared to rebuilding. But as far as the enrollment numbers that were projected back then, you know, I know that it precedes my time here, but the projections that that I've seen didn't happen, and that could be for any number of reasons. But a couple of those reasons that that we believe are to, you know, are for the cause of that are: one, COVID hit, and I think that shifted how you know, the housing market and moving. But then the other thing is the cost of housing on the Wasatch Back is just, it's mm-hmm. it's skyrocketed, and so we see a lot of the homes that are being built or being purchased, they don't have families, school age children, moving in with them, and so I think those are a couple of the reasons why we didn't see the increase in enrollment that they projected. But again, I wasn't around when they were doing that and when they had that company provide that information. So I don't want to put, you know, I don't want to make it out to be more than what it is because I wasn't part of that. But those are a couple of the reasons that we think that didn't happen.
Okay. So the board's knee deep in the budget process. Any tax increases being planned?
Nope. We're not planning on doing any truth in taxation this year.
All right. And tell us a little bit about the budget in terms of what's happening with it.
Well, we do anticipate some property tax growth as far as, you know, just from growth. We estimate just over $500,000 in additional revenue. But then we also have, you know, some increased costs. You know, this is the time of year when we're talking about, you know, salary increases and things, increases in health insurance, dental insurance, that kind of stuff. And so we obviously try to, we want to be fiscally responsible and while also, you know, trying to remain competitive for employees. And so really what we're doing now with the budget is just, it's all projection. We obviously have our budget hearing next month, but the report to the board last night was kind of that 1,000-foot view of it. And so we're moving forward with what we think are anticipated, but Mr. Robinson, our business administrator, he'll have the complete budget proposal and as well as the budget report for our next board meeting.
Mm. And it sounds like the $500,000 in new growth will be just, like you say, eaten up by the step and lane adjustments and the health and dental insurance premiums.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, you wish that insurance didn't cost so much, dang it.
All right.
But that's what happens, right?
And it sounds like you have reduced staffing just a little bit, right? Because you said that you lost 11 and you're hiring 10.
Yeah, so we mentioned a little bit ago about declining enrollment. And so, anytime you can reduce your force through attrition, it's not great, it's certainly less painful than giving several reduction in force notices. So that's how we were able to take care of some of that this year, and it's due to the declining enrollment. So
right.
as our enrollment drops, you know, we want to be, like I said, fiscally responsible, and so that's one of the areas that we are cutting back on.
Tell me, what capital projects do you have planned for this summer?
Well, we've got things going on at the rec center. We've got some things with the pool that are happening. We've got some renovations happening at the high school. There's some projects with the middle school with some restroom tile and things that are going to be replaced. some lighting. The middle school is going to get some lighting upgrades in some of their gyms and their auditorium. There are things that are just kind of on our normal annual basis. We'll be replacing, parts of carpet and parts of the buildings and, paint and just some of the normal every year routine replacement and maintenance things will all be on the summer list as well.
Okay. Graduation, when and where is this happening?
Well, so this year we've got graduation for our South Summit High School is going to be held at the high school, and the graduation for Silver Summit will be at up in Promontory. I don't have the dates right here in front of me, but they do their separate graduations, and they're always a great opportunity to get to see kids just celebrate themselves and celebrate their peers, and it's always a lot of fun to get to go and watch and listen to the speakers, and it's a really fun time as an educator to get to see kids as they're getting ready to kind of leave that educational nest, if you will, to branch out and start on their life's journey.
And any idea how the graduates break down, those going to college, those into the military, maybe into a trade?
I don't have anything right now, no. We generally get that information later.
Okay, anything else?
No, I do have the dates now. The high school here in Camas is May 21st, their graduation, and Silver Summit's May 28th.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I don't think so. Anything else you want to know?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. Have a great day.
That's South Summit Superintendent of Schools, Greg Mond. The People's Health Clinic has hired a new pediatrician, Dr. Zainab Kagan. She joins me now in the studio along with the clinic's CEO, Mari Lining. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Mari, why don't you start by just telling us the need for Dr. Kagan and what sort of work she'll be doing for you?
We are so thrilled to have Dr. Zainab Kagan on board. We've noticed over the past 3 years that our demand for pediatric appointments just keeps going up. In fact, we've had an 80% increase in pediatric visits. And last year, 2025, we had 1,300 pediatric visits, but just space for 600 visits with our volunteer pediatricians. Those kids were still seen, but they were seen by our adult internal medicine physicians, family practice providers who don't work with kids as routinely in our clinic. So we're just really excited to have Dr. Kagan on as our pediatric specialist for these children.
Yeah, you're going to be able to make that 700, that you're kind of lacking visits?
Yeah, we have it all counted out, and fortunately, Jenny Bateman from WIC at Summit County Health Department has allowed us to use her space in the downstairs WIC area on Thursdays to make it even possible for us to take on that capacity.
Okay. Dr. Kagan, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wanted to be part of People's Health Clinic.
Yeah, thank you so much. I live here in Park City, so I'm familiar with the amazing work they do at People's Health Clinic. And so last year when I met Mari and Scott Schulman to talk about this position, I was just really inspired by the amazing work that they do. And so it's just really made me want to join them and meet the needs of our community. So,
yeah. So this is you've been working as a pediatrician, or
yes.
Are you kind of coming out of residency, or?
No, I'm about 12 years out of residency, and my role as director of pediatrics at People's Health Clinic is in partnership with my role at University of Utah and Primary Children's Hospital.
Okay, so is this a part-time position for you then at People's Health Clinic?
Yes.
And you maintain a part-time position with University of Utah?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to have your hands full.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the work with the University of Utah as well as the Intermountain Primary Children's Hospital.
Yeah, so we hope to strengthen that relationship that we have to have our children, having access to the subspecialists at the Children's Hospital and also the different kind of events, conferences, that they have going on at the Children's Hospital and University of Utah. And University of Utah and the Primary Children's Hospital really support submission of the People's Health Clinic.
All right. You also hold additional certification, my understanding, in child development and screening for developmental delays. So how is that done and why is that important?
Yeah. So under the expertise of the child development specialist at University of Utah and primaries, I completed a pediatric developmental disability certificate. So this was extra training in pediatrics to better care for children with developmental concerns. So that includes like developmental delays, autism, ADHD, anxiety. Those are a few of them. And so this is really important in my work as a general pediatrician. I'm really excited to bring that experience to People's Health Clinic where I know it's needed.
Yeah. And with the number of diagnoses that we now have for autism and ADHD, is it because we're diagnosing better or is it just that we've got more incidents of it?
I think we are diagnosing better. I think it's multifactorial. So,
can you talk a little bit more about that?
So there's a lot of different, I think there's more awareness right now as far as understanding what it is, how it may be presenting in different communities, in different genders. So, and also more access, such as people like myself as pediatricians evaluating this when previously it was maybe child development behavioral psychologists, pediatricians who are subspecialized, or psychiatrists.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about, what's going to be added to? You're just going to be able to offer more of those well child visits that kind of required at least every year for a while, right?
Yes, totally. So it's definitely well child visits, and we have an amazing team of pediatricians at People's Health Clinic, you know, Dr. Jeff Schiff and Dr. Jamie Rubin. So we're also trying to expand and offer more same day visits because we know kids get sick last minute and need to be seen the same day. And where we stand right now, we have someone available to see children every day for those last minute visits.
Yeah, so Mari, what's the plan then to make that same day visit goal happen?
Well, with Dr. Kagan on board, we're actually making it happen now. Mm-hmm. The tricky part for us, of course, is that we have absolutely no space. And so it's our wonderful operations director, Dahlia Gonzalez, moving chess pieces around to get the schedules set so we can make these visits happen for kids. But it's really important to us that the community knows that these visits are available. You know, again, it's one thing for kids to have their well-child visit. Those are very, very important. But realistically, a large percentage of visits to pediatricians are those last-minute child, you know, acute illnesses like strep throat, where they just need to get in and be seen.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest issues that you deal with children at the clinic?
Okay. I mean, for our patient population, one huge issue we have is actually delayed diagnosis of developmental delays. That's something in an immigrant population that's often missed, in part because of language barriers, as well as health literacy. And so to have Dr. Kagan's expertise at the clinic to be able to catch our children early and intervene early for these developmental delays, that in itself is health equity happening at the People's Health Clinic for kids.
Right. Yeah, and I'd like to add, I think also behavioral health screenings too. So, you know, there's a rise in incidence of depression and anxiety. So it'd be important for us to continue that screening, especially in our, you know, school-age children and teenagers also, and open up that discussion regarding mental health.
So what about just health issues?
I think our access to dental care would be one thing, and to improve our vision screenings and getting our children who may have vision concerns seen also.
Okay. Let's see. Tell me a little bit about the work that you're doing with Wasatch and Summit County school districts.
Yeah, so we hope to work closely with the school districts in coordinated approach, of course, with parental consent too. So often medical systems and schools have been siloed, although our common goals are to help the kids. So we hope that we can work together to identify patients who may need support, improve access to behavioral health services, improve student outcomes, and reduce health disparities.
And we're just, we've had Dr. Kagan on board for 1 month now, so we're just in the process of organizing meetings with the school districts in Park City and in Heber. And again, we're just really excited to have a smooth pipeline of referrals that come to us, and so our uninsured children know where to go.
Yeah, and so how often are you there at the clinic with appointments?
I am there 2 days a week.
All right, Thursdays you mentioned?
Thursdays and Mondays.
Okay, and all day?
Thursdays all day and Monday afternoon.
Okay. And that's enough then to get to the number of visits that you need to see.
It is, along with our absolutely wonderful volunteer pediatricians, as Dr. Kagan mentioned, two of them are Dr. Jeff Schiff and Dr. Jamie Rubin, and they come regularly. So with this team and then a few other actual volunteer pediatricians who work with us seasonally, we've got a full slate.
Okay. Mari, save the date. Tell us about your upcoming fundraiser.
Walk in Wine is going to be on August 9th this year. We moved it back hoping for better weather. We're going to be launching ticket sales in early June, so watch out for that. It's a really fun day. You start with a hike at Deer Valley or the choice of yoga, followed by wine on the patio. And then we have a luncheon put on by Stein Erickson that's beautiful, filled with our providers and our patients telling the stories.
And it usually does sell out, so.
It does, so please pay attention. I will be sending out emails and social media, radio announcement when tickets are available.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
Actually, sponsorships are available now as well, so if you are interested in being a sponsor of Walk and Wine, please reach out to me, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, Dr. Kagan, Mari Linen, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, professor and policy expert Natalie Gochnauer says Utah has entered a new era with different economic opportunities and challenges than ever before. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more on the, quote, new Utah.
The 2026 Zions Bank Wasatch Back Economics Summit began on an optimistic note Monday. Natalie Gochner, who teaches business at the University of Utah and directs its Kim C. Gardner Policy Institute, addressed the crowd in the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley.
And there's actually good news ahead in the sense that you are in the state of Utah, you are in urban Utah, you are in the back of urban Utah. There's almost no better place to be in the entire country.
Gochner acknowledged dropping consumer confidence, higher prices, especially at the pump, and, quote, tepid job growth in Utah and across America. But rather than dwell on the slowing economy, she portrayed Utah as still prosperous compared to the rest of the country.
And our challenge is, how do we grow and change and still maintain everything that makes us special? So what is the new Utah? Well, we've gone from a small state to a mid-sized state.
In 2020, Utah ranked 30th in population, whereas it ranked 34th in the three censuses prior. The Gardner Institute estimates transplants now account for 61% of Utah's growth. That's double what they did between 2000 and 2020. Consequently, Utah is now older and more ethnically and racially diverse than before. The main risk Gochner sees in those trends is high housing costs, since wages haven't kept pace with rising land values.
I'll just say that Summit and Park City are known for really high quality growth that isn't off the charts. It's a more managed growth, and it just shows up in the numbers. It's in part, I think, deliberate decision-making. I'll let y'all decide that.
Summit County is sandwiched in between the places with the most job growth, Morgan County, and population growth, Wasatch. But Gochner praised conservation, like Park City's purchase of the McPullen Farm from the Osgathorpe family. That preserved the iconic white barn and surrounding land as a green entry corridor.
You have a lot of what I'll call critical lands. These are lands that have value in the way they currently are.
The Gardner Institute has a list of the, quote, magnificent seven indicators it thinks prove Utah's unique prosperity. Those include a growing population and youthfulness, coupled with high household income and low poverty rates. Gochner implored the crowd of a few hundred government, tourism, real estate, and business leaders to help Utah capitalize on those qualities. Despite a dingy national economic outlook, she says Utah can show other states the path to success. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Three Utah residents are in quarantine following a hantavirus outbreak on an international cruise. KPCW's Gavin McGough reports local public health officials are taking note.
Three Utahns and 13 other Americans are at the National Quarantine Unit in Omaha, Nebraska, after being exposed to a hantavirus while on the cruise ship Modius. The presence of Utah residents on the ship caused a local response, Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant said.
We spent the better part of the weekend on the phone with the State Health Department, All 13 local health departments are working closely together. We are prepared and with the support of the state health department and the CDC as a state to manage this situation as it presents itself.
In a Monday statement, state health officials said the Utah residents will remain at the federal quarantine facility until they're cleared to return home. Once in Utah, they'll be monitored for symptoms. Public health experts do not expect the outbreak to impact the general public, Bondurant added.
With the information that's available to us right now, I'm confident that the steps that have been taken are going to limit disease transmission.
Hantaviruses are rodent-borne illnesses which can be deadly in humans. According to the WHO, human-to-human transmission of the disease is uncommon. Summit County Health is a financial supporter of KPCW. Gavin McGough, KPCW News.